It was once called Ladies Resort to the Ocean. Now it's simply Ocean City. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. That's just one of the little-known facts about Maryland's famous resort. And its landscape is filled with a collection of features ranging from Nanticoke Indian figure who greets visitors in the inlet to Trimper's Rides and Amusement Park with its famed carousel. In short, it is what author Kristen Helf in her new book calls Ocean City Oddities. It is co-authored by Brandon Seidel. And we have Kristen on the phone with us this morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So what got you interested in writing about these interesting figures and hotels and dimensions of the city?
Yeah, so right after college, my husband and I moved to Ocean City. He's actually from there originally. And I had spent my whole life going to Ocean City every summer. So, of course, I was so excited to actually get to live there. So when we moved, I worked at the Art League of Ocean City, and I also did a blog. I blogged for OceanCity.com, which allowed me to really explore a lot of the really interesting and unique aspects of Ocean City. So I actually wrote about the haunted house, the Trimper's Haunted House, on the boardwalk, because that was something that always really fascinated me, that I thought was just so unique and interesting and weird. So I think you could say the haunted house kind of started the book, whether we knew it or not at the time. So I wrote my article, and Brandon actually reached out to me after he read it because I cited him as a source for a lot of the information that I found. He has a website, OCHH.net, which is dedicated to the total history of the Trimper's Haunted House. So he reached out to me, and he was like, hey, thanks for, like, citing me in your article. I'm actually... He knows pretty much everything about this haunted house. I mean, he's a total historian about it. So we met up at the Frog Bar and just talked about our love for Ocean City and how we wanted to explore some more of the weird places and rides and landmarks that we found interesting. And that's kind of how the book came to be, because we knew, other than the haunted house, there were so many opportunities to learn more about just the history and, you know, all of our favorite things.
Now, describe a little bit of the history of Ocean City. They indicated earlier that it was known at one point as a ladies' resort to the ocean. What was it like in those early years?
Yeah, so, of course, as you can imagine, it was a lot different than it is now. I do want to point out this book, it does kind of seem like a history book, but it's not meant to be like a total history of Ocean City, Maryland. And I don't want readers to go into it thinking that, you know, this is the Ocean City history book, because it's not. We do cover a lot of the early history of Ocean City, but it's more little vignettes, I would say. So, for example, we talk about a lot about the Life Saving Station Museum. We talk a lot about, you know, some of the older hotels in town. But it's really, it wasn't meant to be like a total history of Ocean City. It's more of a passion project for Brandon's and mine, so everything that we thought was unique and odd that readers might want to know more about, you know, like the carousel at Trimper's, which is one of the oldest in the world, the haunted house, like I mentioned before, the Inlet Indian that you see when you're, the Inlet Native American statue that you see when you're turning into the inlet, just things that we thought people might want to know more about.
So I understand, by the way, I understand that originally there was no boardwalk.
There originally was no boardwalk. Actually, in the early days, the shop owners along the beach would roll out boards of their own to make it easier for people to get from one building to another. But it wasn't until decades and decades after that that they actually finally put down a boardwalk, like an official boardwalk that people could use.
So one of the things that's... occurred in 1933 was the storm that actually created probably one of the most famous features of the city, which is the inlet. Describe for mm-hmm. me what that was about.
Yeah, you pretty much got it. In 1933, this huge storm, it really was kind of tragic to a lot of Ocean City at the time, but it ended up cutting the inlet, which kind of explains the geography there that you see today. You go down to the inlet and you can look across the ocean and you can see Assateague, but it actually used to be connected to Ocean City. But, you know, it was terrible for a lot of the businesses in Ocean City at the time in the 1930s that everything just got totally wiped out and washed away. But, you know, it's Ocean City is a very resilient place, and everyone, all the business owners and the locals came together to rebuild after the storm of 1933. And as they've continued doing since, I mean, there have been a lot of natural disasters, I guess, the big storm of March of the 1960s, too. Just over and over again, you know, people come back together and they help each other rebuild.
And I guess it's also allowed boats to a little more access, I guess, to Ocean City?
Yes, it has. Without that inlet, you know, it wouldn't be the fishing town that it is today, really. That's how boats are able to access Ocean City, yep.
So one of the famous figures, as I mentioned a moment ago, was the Ananicoke Indian, which greets you really as you drive in to park your car. What's the history behind that? I understand that there are more than one of these things out there.
Yeah, so that was actually one of my favorite things to research. So it was created by this guy, Peter Toth, this sculptor, and he actually made a similar Native American statue for each of the states in the U.S., and some states even have a few. I believe Maryland only has the one, which you see in Ocean City. But it's really funny, because ever since I did the research into that Native American Ananicoke statue, my husband and I, when we, like, do our travels around the United States, suddenly we've been kind of seeing them everywhere. Like, last year we were in the small town Winslow, Arizona. We were on this, like, totally empty residential street, and we saw this giant Native American, like, totem pole, and we were like, is that a Peter Toth sculpture? And sure enough, it was. And right now, we were actually a few days ago in Cherokee, North Carolina. We were driving down the road, and we saw this giant, it was just like the head of the Native American sculpture, and it was actually really cute. It had a mask over the bottom half of it, but we were like, that's a Peter Toth sculpture, right? And we looked it up, and of course it was. So once you know the history of some of these cool landmarks, it's kind of like, you know, you can open your eyes a little bit more and start, like we did, seeing them in more places, which is really cool. But that's something that's unique to Ocean City. Not unique to Ocean City, since there are some in every state, but they're all different, too. None of the sculptures are exactly the same, of course, so that was really cool to learn about.
Right. I understand he did these for free, and I guess it's...
Yeah,
go ahead.
It was a way of... So Peter Toth was European, but he migrated to the United States with his parents, I believe, in the 20th century. So this was kind of his way of just thanking the country that had taken in him and his family. So he made these sculptures totally for free. In a lot of the states, you know, people would find out what he was doing, and they would let him just, like, sleep on their couches, and they would feed him, which I would hope is what happened when he came to make the sculpture in Ocean City, because it's a really cool thing. But, yeah, it was total donation on his part.
Moving on, we mentioned a moment ago life-saving station. Tell me a little bit about the history of that. I guess it's been turned into a museum.
Yeah, so the life-saving station was originally, it was a Coast Guard life-saving station that was on the beach. It was further up the beach. I can't recall at the moment what street it was on, but eventually at one point in the 20th century, they did move it down to the inlet, and they turned it into a museum. And that was one of my favorite things to do research on, too, because there's a lot of ghost stories, as with many, like, old historical buildings. Of course, you're going to find a lot of ghost stories about them, but that was fun to learn about. So those who ever take a trip into the Life Saving Station Museum, it's kind of cool to think about some of the ghosts you might see when you're there, but also just the things inside of it are really cool, like Laughing Sal, for example. She's this giant She looks like a doll, but she's this giant sculpture that was once a barker at an amusement place down on the boardwalk in, I guess, the 50s and 60s, I want to say. But they've kept her very well preserved, and now she's in this box at the Life Saving Station Museum. And if you press a button, she'll still do her famous, like, cackling laugh, and she'll sway her head back and forth, kind of. And she's, of course, people say she's haunted too, that if, even if you don't press the button, you might hear her laugh sometime when you're up there. But there's just a lot of cool things in there. So we learned a lot about the Life Saving Station Museum itself, and we also learned a lot about the cool things that are within its walls.
Tell us a little bit about the ghost stories. Any particular one that comes to mind?
I'm thinking, so there are quite a few. In fact, there's a whole book of ghost stories from Ocean City, from the Eastern Shore, by the author Mindy Burgoyne, who is also published by the History Press. So she is definitely an expert on the Ocean City ghost stories. But one that I think about, there's this little, I'm trying to think of what it's called, this capsule that they use.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go into the museum, it was like, I think, used by the Coast Guard to rescue people who were lost out at sea. So they would put them in this like metal capsule and pull them in their boat back to the shore. But one of the ghost stories is a few people actually claim to have looked inside of this life-saving capsule and seen like body of a dead sailor, you know, or a drowned sailor inside of it. And they'll walk into the room, and suddenly it'll get all cold in there, and they'll look in and they'll gasp because they see this like drowned body in it, and then they'll look back inside, and of course there's nothing there. So that was one of the creepy ones that comes to mind.
Tell me
the something to look out for when you're there. Whether you believe or not.
Well, we'll see whether it's there or not, right? So they also, moving on, you have the Morbid Manor. What's that all about?
Oh, yeah, the Morbid Manor. There's a lot of different things that used to be at the inlet on the pier down there that aren't anymore, including the Morbid Manor, which was another haunted house in Ocean City. And that was more, so the haunted house that's still on the boardwalk, you get inside your little coffin car and it kind of takes you around the building, but this one was more the kind that you walk through when you have like basically teenagers dressed up as monsters jumping out to scare you. That was in, I want to say, the 80s and 90s era in Ocean City. Unfortunately, there was a fire caused by an electric problem, so once Morbid Manor kind of burned to the ground, they never bothered to resurrect it. But if you look at pictures, it really is like a cool and creepy-looking building. But again, it was just teenagers dressing up, kind of popping out of the dark to scare you. And there are some stories that the teens who worked there would just like have parties late at night once the haunted house was closed, or they would even like just hang out and sleep there during the summer. So that was kind of cool.
Probably one of the most famous rides or attractions is Trimper's Rise and Amusement Park. What's the history of that?
So that is a very old park, and the carousel inside of Trimper's is actually one of the oldest in the world. It's definitely the oldest in the United States. And I'm going to talk about that a little because I think it's so cool. And that's another ghost story that we mentioned too, is that there's a horse on it dedicated to Johanna Trimper. It's the blue horse with the white horse with the blue ribbon, and people say that when it comes by, you can still smell her perfume.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the oldest carousels in the world, and just one of those things that's constantly being restored and refurbished, of course, and you hope it's there forever. But yeah, Trimper's as a whole, they have all of these old rides that have been restored from their glory days and are still in operation, like the Whip, for example. It's the one that it's just like this oval and little kids get inside the carts and it just whips you around the corner as it goes by. That one is from, I believe, the 1930s, and it's still in operation. So it's just really cool that you know, people's great-great-great-grandparents rode on these rides when Trimper's first opened, and their kids are still going on them today. It's really cool. That was fun to write about as well.
And I also noticed there's this thing called the Trimper's Haunted House. What was that about?
Yeah, the Haunted House, like I mentioned, it was like the point where me and Brandon decided to write this book. The Haunted House was built by a man called Bill Tracy, who just made haunted houses for a living. In the 1960s is when it first opened on the boardwalk. And what's really cool about the Haunted House is that a lot of the stunts in it today are the original ones that Bill Tracy put in there when the ride first opened. So originally the Haunted House was only one story, just a quick little ride. And, you know, a lot of the day glow neon paint in the dark rooms, you see a lot of the stunts of like the woman being about to be cut in half by a chainsaw. They're very cheesy now, but they were really, really cool at the time. And a lot of them, like the chainsaw woman, are still in there today. So one thing that we found really interesting, that I found really interesting, which made me want to write about it in the first place, because I had grown up as a little kid going to the haunted house and being totally scared of it, is that you can tell these stunts are really old. They're from the 1960s and they're still in there today, and they're just like mixed in with these like brand new like zombies, and just like you have parts of it that are from the 60s, parts that are from the 80s, parts that are from like were updated to the haunted house last year. So while I wouldn't say it's the scariest haunted house in the world now, even though I thought it was when I was a little kid, it's definitely the most unique because it's this amalgamation of decades of haunted house stunts. It's very cool, and I don't think there's anything like it in the world, probably.
Go ahead.
There was the pirate ship, which I believe is retired now. Sorry, my husband's right here. BL, is the pirate ship still there? That's also a Bill Tracy ride, and they took a lot of the original stunts from that pirate ship ride and put them into the haunted house, too, just as a way to preserve them.
Do the rides still have Rest in Peace?
Does it still have what?
Rest in Peace? Cars? Rest in Peace? I think I think that's one of the things it has on the ride itself.
They still have those coffin cars that say rest in peace on them, and my co-author Brandon actually has one of his own of the coffin cars that was a wedding gift from the Trimpers. So if you ever go into Brandon's garage, he will let you sit in his own custom coffin car.
There you go. One of the most actually fun people I've actually interviewed down there is Joe Croart, who's owner of the Ocean City Gallery. Tell me a little bit about that. And there's a phrase I think you have in there is that that he never met a gimmick he didn't like.
Yeah, so I love Ocean Gallery. It's one of the craziest places on the boardwalk. And again, I feel like I keep saying this, but there's truly nothing like it in the world. And that was one of the first places I went to when I started doing research for the book, because obviously when you think of the Ocean City Boardwalk, you think of Ocean Gallery because it's just so ostentatious and incredible. So I went in and I talked to Joe Croart, who many people will recognize as the tuxedoed owner of Ocean Gallery. And he was more than happy to tell me all about the history of Ocean Gallery from when he first came to Ocean City as, I believe, a college student. And he just, he literally started selling his own paintings on the front porch of a hotel when he first came to Ocean City in the 20th century. And it just kind of blossomed into Ocean Gallery. And of course, he's never met a gimmick he didn't like. And he loved talking about the gallery. He actually... the second day I met with him, he presented me with this giant manila folder that was just bursting at the seams with like every newspaper article and every magazine write-up that had ever been done about Ocean Gallery, because he's a collector, which you would, of course, realize from looking at the outside of the building. He just tacks things on up there and inside the building as well. So he's collected everything that's been written about Ocean Gallery over the years. So I had this literally ginormous one of those file folder kind of folders to sift through of literally everything that's ever been written about Ocean Gallery when I went to write that section. But he is such a friendly and welcoming gentleman, and he was so helpful, not just in when I came to write about Ocean Gallery, but he's a wealth of information about Ocean City in general since he's been there for decades. He knows a lot of the weird things that have gone on in Ocean City, which of course is what we wanted to write about. A lot of them he was the catalyst for. Like there was, he does these art cars. Of course, if you've seen the Batmobile that he has parked in the side street by Ocean Gallery, he kind of just found an old car and started painting it black and tacking all of this stuff on top of it like he does to the building, and he called it the Batmobile. He's got other cars like that, too. One's a cow. There was one that he called the Titanic that he made to look kind of like a boat that he actually sunk to the bottom of the ocean off of, I guess it was the inlet or off of one of the beaches, off of the beach in Ocean City. And yeah, there's even this project called Boathenge, where he wanted to kind of make his own version of Stonehenge, but with old boats just on the beach. Unfortunately, I don't think City Council allowed him to do that, so that was one of the Ocean City oddities that never actually came to be. But yeah, he just has all of these great stories about Ocean City and all of these strange and fun things that have happened over the years.
I mean, in fact, one of the things that you'll notice as you walk down the boardwalk is on the side of his building, it's just this sort of mass of images and pictures. What's the story behind that? I mean, that's something that people notice right away when they walk down the boardwalk.
The story behind that, really, as they built Ocean Gallery. Sorry, my dog's barking.
It's all right.
As they made Ocean Gallery into what it is today, he's a showman. They call him the P.T. Barnum of fine art, and I think he wanted the front of his building to display that and to capture people's attention. So he just, once he started, he never stopped adding things to it, is really what it comes down to.
And they, right, because it's just this mishmash of things that, sort of a collage, I think. I think is maybe the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
The other thing I noticed was, at least I don't know whether it's seasonal or not, it's this religious sand sculpture that shows up. Tell me a little bit about that. I think it's Randy Hoffman does that.
Yeah, Randy Hoffman does the sand sculptures on the beach. And, yeah, they're beautiful. Actually, my co-author Brandon knows a little bit more about that than I do. He wrote some of the sections of the book, and he actually had Randy Hoffman. You can pay him, and he'll make you like a sand sculpture for your wedding if you would like. So they're not. He does the religious scenes in the sand, but you know, Brandon also had one with him and his wife's initials for their wedding, which I thought was really cool. But yeah, it's just one of those. Another thing that makes Ocean City unique is that when you're walking down the boardwalk, you see these beautiful religious sculptures in the sand. And I think he actually uses a crab mallet to first put it together and then like a little pick to do all the fine details. So if you ever get the chance to see him work on them, you know, it's really fun to watch, too.
Right. I mean, one of the things I think is it's sort of a Jesus figure thing in the center, and then there are some other figures, I think, on either side, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So also there are these boardwalk birds, 5 feet tall. What are those about?
So in the early 21st century, it was kind of a project by the town of Ocean City where they encouraged all of the businesses in Ocean City to buy one of these birds, I guess, from a local artist who had come in and sculpted all of them. And she made them all to be very unique, clearly, and I think some of the businesses actually decorated them themselves. And then after maybe a year or summer or so, they were auctioned off, I think to raise money just for the town of Ocean City, although it's been a while since I read about that, so I could be incorrect. Don't quote me on that. But yeah, sometime in the early 21st century, early 2000s, you would see all of these beach birds as you're driving through town, and they were all totally unique. And there's still one in front of the Art League of Ocean City, the Bird Dog, and there was another one, I think, with it, too, one that was made of these, like, kind of mosaic glass pieces. So if you're lucky, you might still see one or two around town, but most of them were auctioned off. So that was just a cool point in Ocean City history where you could point and say, oh, there's one of the beach birds.
And there's also, there used to be an old bandstand, but that's now gone.
Yeah, in the early 20th century, there was an old bandstand down at the boardwalk. But I think while there used to be, you know, music down there, I think it became a place just for kids to hang out and kind of loiter around. So they did get rid of the old bandstand after a while. But that was cool, too, when there was, like, live bands playing down there. Now we have the Caroline Street stage, which isn't quite the same. But, you know, you can still listen to your live music on the beach.
Also, we got some of the restaurants and the hotels. There's the Harbor Inn, which I understand is owned by women and began actually somewhere in the 1920s during Prohibition.
Yes. So I think I can say this now. During Prohibition, they were selling alcohol down there at the Harbor Inn. It's one of the oldest bars, I believe, in America that lasted through Prohibition. I think someone who worked at the bar or who frequented the bar was kind of friends with the chief of police back then, so they would know when they were coming by. It was a convenience store during that time. So they would know when, like, the police were coming by, and they would take all of their liquor and just hide it underneath the counters, I think. But they were operating during Prohibition, and you can still go into Harbor Inn today, and they've got all these old newspaper articles about their history up on the walls. But it's been owned and operated by women as well for generations, which is very cool. So the Harbor Inn is the oldest bar in Ocean City, and the second oldest bar is the Inlet Lodge, which is of course right down there on the inlet. Those are both, I believe, from, like, so Harbor Inn, 1920s era, while the Inlet Lodge, I would say, 1930s or 40s era. So we've got a lot of really cool old bars down here.
Also, I guess, finally, we got Princess, she's a fortune teller in Ocean City. Tell me a little bit about that figure.
Yeah, Brandon wrote about her, so I don't really know much about our fortune teller down there, but you can go and put a few coins in and get your fortune told by this lady down at Trimper's Rise. Unfortunately, I don't know much about that.
Right there.
I'm sorry.
Do you have a favorite oddity?
Yes, my favorite oddity, I would say, is the Ocean City, the Trimper's Haunted House, and I also like Laughing Sal because she's just so boisterous and wonderful, and if you go into the Life Saving Station Museum, you've got to pay her a visit.
Okay. Well, we've been speaking with Kristen Helf and the new book, Ocean City Oddities. It's also co-authored by Brendan Seidel, and we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much.
This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.